to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes. Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay this man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns.
What are they going to say?
No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tim Holley, Mr. Matt Weber. Back on the board. S&P futures down 775. They've been down 775.8 for a little bit. Dow futures down 61. NASDAQ futures down 51. All kinds of stuff going on this morning here, Manny. We've got Microsoft trying to buy it's a speech recognition company. Do you know these guys? Manny, I think, is on the phone. So, we've got, anyway, they're trying to buy the speech recognition place for 23% above where they closed last night, which is interesting. I don't think Microsoft should be allowed to buy anybody, but that's just me. But that's, I continue to look at all the, by nuances, the speech recognition company, and they're, Maddie, do we have Odd? Hey, Odd, how are you?
Good morning. Just fine. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Hey, I was asking Matty here what he was talking to you. Matty, you know much about this Nuance company?
I do not.
These are the guys that Microsoft's going to buy for $16 billion. They're a speech recognition company for, like, phones, and I thought maybe you guys would be into that stuff.
Well, I'm sure someone at my company is. I am not aware of this company, but it makes sense.
Yeah, I think those are the guys.
I think it's like that Dragon software that used to be so big, but this Nuance, I think, has, like, taken over. So, yeah, I mean, it's everybody's, first of all, we're spoiled to be able to type on our phones. Now we just even want to talk on the phones and not even worry about typing and spelling.
I'm so over talking to not a person. I can't stand it. Just saying.
I know.
Well, I'm just, what can I tell you? I'm a Luddite, and I don't mind it. Just saying.
Well, I don't think it's even that. I think the art of communication is being lost in the art of sentences and completing a full thought is being lost by some, not all, but a few. You know, you've got what you and I learned in school, how to construct an argument along a line of thought and explain it is slowly but surely being lost, I think.
Well, you got to do it in a few characters now. A few characters and an insult.
Yeah, well.
You're right about that.
It goes around, comes around, I'm hoping here.
Well, I don't know that we ever get totally all the way back, but, hey, interesting, I'm surprised, Manny, we made it back from Britain in time. 12 o'clock last night, the pubs opened.
Oh, really?
And, Boris Johnson said he'd be one of the first people there to hoist a pint. I don't blame him. Hey, so we had some interesting. Well, you're going to have to bear with us on some sports for a second. I still can't. I'm stunned by the guy on the. Well, first of all, I love the Masters yesterday. Love to see that guy win. I mean, I love to see anybody win. It's just a great day for any of those guys. What about that? Now, you and your brother. Well, you used to be skinnier, but the. You're skinny guys, bigger than that guy. You can hit the ball like that kid who's 160 pounds. It's a thing about 5 miles.
Yeah, the Will Zolotaris or whatever his
Jesus
name was.
Jesus Christ, the kid looks like he's there's nothing to him, but he hits the ball out of the atmosphere.
And not only that, he could putt too. I mean, he was doing everything. The guy was on fire all week and finishes one shot back. I mean, he gave a couple of shots back on the back nine that he had been making all tournament, and that was the difference. And Hideki bogeyed 18, and man, he was one shot back. Like, he was kicking himself because that kid was played great. 24 years old out of Wake Forest.
So what this kid played around with Jordan Spieth when he was 9 and Spieth was 11.
I didn't realize Spieth was that young still. So if that would make Spieth 26, is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, he's a...
I thought Spieth was like 30.
Well, he's been around a while, but plus he... Was he only got one the PGA's the only one left he hasn't won, right?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Well, Arnie Palmer never got the PGA. He had all the rest of them, but he couldn't get that one. Sometimes the one you're looking for is the one you can't get. But it is amazing how with the different people, with the different styles of courses, the different guys that win, they're always up there in the different events. In the U.S. Open, you got to be an absolute animal with all that rough. Where this thing is, there's no rough. There actually is no rough at all at the... I don't know if you noticed that or not.
It goes into, well, there's a deeper cut. It's not like U.S. Open rough, obviously.
No, there's no
there's
like,
a deeper cut, and then it goes into that pine straw.
Right, but you never have to hack through something 6 inches high.
No, yeah.
And but everything, it's all greens, and you know, I mean, you and I played. Well, you're still playing, but I used to play a real lot of. Nothing aggravates you more than like hitting one up on the green, having a thing roll off.
Yeah,
I don't know that that's all that fair.
We're not, yeah, I mean, that's, I mean, we're not at that level. Like, for me, nothing pisses me off more than if I actually hit a good drive and it's on the fairway and then I don't have a shot when I'm on the fairway. And there's instances of that when you, on some of these pro courses.
Or, the one guy hit one in the, you got a six in the par three and he was over the water. How far back did that thing roll to get in the water for the guy?
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's just, it's nuts. Anyway. So, Audrey, we wanted to, I'm trying to get some kind of an idea from you, because last week we were talking with John Flanagan and others about what's going on in the real estate. And somehow, you get, you know what it reminds me of, Manny? Talk about having two people on, you wouldn't think of me talking about the same subject. The selling property sometimes reminds me of the free agent market in baseball. You know, if all of a sudden you get a huge demand in the suburbs, because 50 people can't wait to get out of the city, and two or three houses all of a sudden trade for 250 where they were trading at 225, and all of a sudden everybody's at 250. But the fact is, not everybody can pay 250 that's even in the house. It certainly did that in 2007, right? Where you got to the point where...
Well, it's not the same. It's not the same thing. The prices are up, yes, but they are up across the board in, you're right, there. I mean, there's definitely a city exodus and everybody's commenting on it. People just want out. They don't want to be in Chicago, and we're seeing that pretty much everywhere. But it has been a definite seller's market. It's been for the prices, but it's not what you are seeing with what happened in 08. Everything is much more difficult to get a mortgage. You have to be, anybody who's gone through a mortgage process will tell you that it's pretty difficult to prove that you have the money. So it is, it's not quite the same thing at all. You know, you're actually seeing something with the law of supply and demand just basically work itself out. Don't want to be in the city, so the property in the suburbs are hotter.
But I guess my question is when that happens, I mean, it's not to the same degree. But, you know, nothing's ever to the same degree. But I seem to recall I had a friend who was, she listened to the show in 2007. Jan and I were on, and sent me this email saying that they had a, she lived in, what's the area way to hell west on, like Belmont, out in the O's? The O's streets? We almost have to take the train in, like, there's no way you can get there from here.
Are you talking about the city or the suburbs?
The city, like you know, two blocks from the end of the city, way the hell, almost by O'Hare.
Saugatash or Norridge or Irving Park?
I think it's Norridge. But anyway, she sent me this
Norridge
email.
Is a suburb, but...
Well, she sent me this email saying that they had a block party, and they sat down, and all the houses were like up to four something, allegedly. She said not one person at the block party could come close to buying their house at the current price.
No, but look at it the other way. You've got a condo on Michigan Avenue that, you know, you paid $600 for, and you're still willing to come out in the suburbs and buy a house for $350 or $4.
Well, is there, how much is, and I don't know if, this is, if I'm jumping on this question, but how easy would it be to sell the thing on Michigan Avenue? In other words, are those guys losing as much as the suburbs are gaining?
Well, I know the few people I dealt with, you know, sold their place, but not for what they would have sold it a year, you know, several years ago. So, you know, it's like anything else, it moves around, but it is happening. It's just a fact.
Yeah, oh yeah. Well, I guess my question is how, it's not a one word answer, but if one or two people pay up for a house, first of all, how quickly does the assessments reach the new price, and then all of a sudden is everybody else's allegedly worth the new price? I guess how quickly does that happen? I mean, this
the data happens instantly. So if something closes on a Friday, the data's live within 24 hours, so it gets integrated with appraisers and things as it comes out in real market time.
Well, okay, so I'm stumbling along here as usual.
I mean, the data is available, you know, within 24 to 48 hours after closing to anybody who wants to look it up.
All right, but walk me through from the start. And you've had some of these, I know, and I'm not going to talk out of school, but price of all the houses, condos, whatever it is that you're selling, you look at me and you say, this thing's worth $220. All of a sudden, there's a big demand for it. Somebody bids $240. And then you'll say to me, I don't know if it'll assess out. All of a sudden, the guy goes, screw it, I don't care, I'm paying the difference cash, I want this place. How quickly does every place else now assess at $240?
Again, when it closes, it reflects the new price, and it becomes part of the real data. So as soon as the deal closes, you will see that.
All right, so if it happens to one or two or three of them, all of a sudden, the assessed price is now $240, pretty much.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that makes
now
sense.
Because now you've got, real sales to back it up.
And now the...
not just somebody who's asking the price. This is already closed.
All right, so then the bank goes along with that. And does the first person have to come up with more cash usually, or the bank just says, oh, it's time for it to be $240?
Well, very few people will come up over an appraised value because most people don't have the money, the luxury of money, to do that. So if a house is $240 and they pay $260 and the bank's like, we're only going to give you, $240, well, then most people will either back off or renegotiate the sale price with the seller. So if the seller and buyer can't come to an agreement and come down to $240 or whatever they agree on, then a lot of times the deal just falls apart.
Okay, because
but you have to really, really, really want a home to pay up for the difference. And if people want the house and have the money, as say a couple of people I know have done that, and they're perfectly happy with it because it's something that they truly wanted and knew they could not duplicate otherwise, then they're happy to do it. But it doesn't usually happen with the average person.
All right, because what I'm trying to get to is last week. Sometimes I'm stumbling these days, but what I'm trying to get to is that the one of the listeners sent me an article last week regarding in some areas of the country how the prices of houses are up, 25-30% last year, and I was just wondering how the hell with the embedded appraisal system where you almost can't pay up until somebody's paid up before. How that happens that rapidly, I guess, is my question. I mean,
it happened rapid. It's been happening for the last couple years out here, pretty much everywhere out here.
Okay, because they're talking about parts of the country that are just rocking. I mean, some of the places in Texas.
Well, they're going to be able to match what the demand is. If the demand is there substantially. It's actually what's going on with used cars right now. Also, anybody's trying to buy a car lately. It's still simply a supply and demand. And now they still have to meet appraisal criteria and do some not appraise out. Yes, it does happen. But if you get a house that in a neighborhood that everything is maybe standard 19 and let's say maybe standard 2000 and somebody came along and gutted it and now it looks like, was built this year, then you're going to get credit for any renovations you made also.
Well, the guys in, say, New York, that are off in their places and buying stuff in Florida or Tennessee or South Carolina, they're just running roughshod over the old prices, right? Pretty much. Oh, Maddie, what you didn't do, you were off last week. One of our people we were in an accident on the Eisenhower. He's okay. That's fine. So the car is totaled. The insurance company gives them, like $4,000 or $5,000 more than they paid for the car a year ago. And they can't come close to duplicating with the $5,000 more. That's how much these used car prices are going up.
Wow.
Yeah. It's absolutely scary. It's absolutely scary. And then you've got your Fed chairman, you know, what is it, the slack-jawed Fed chairman on there talking about don't worry about it as he's driving around in his governmental limousine, pretty much. Just, you know.
Yeah, I love how if you don't take food, energy out of the average person's day-to-day expenses, there's no inflation. But anybody who's been to the grocery store in the last few months would realize how much things cost.
I don't. You know, it's funny how they when everybody
and gasoline's up what $1 a gallon.
Yeah, yeah.
Thanks, Biden.
Thanks, Biden. The you know it is maybe. I mean, you're stuck listening to me. Okay, so how many people do you think have any idea why the food and energy, what the history of food and energy being pulled out, being reported separately and together? Do you have any idea how many people have any idea where that comes from?
I don't know where it comes
I'm
from.
I'm sure you'll tell us.
Thanks, bud. It's always good to have your significant other on the air giving you grief. It's always great. Yeah, I deserve it, I suppose. what happened was when the 1970s inflation came, even though it started when the Fed. Well, in the Treasury, went off to Bretton Woods. We went off the gold standard, essentially to be able to put more money into the system to pay for the Vietnam War. So we started putting money into the system, so inflation was already percolating. That's when you started hearing about the Milton Friedman basically running around Washington blaming the Fed for creating the inflation. And while they were wondering where it came from, well, in the middle of all that, you had the Arab oil embargo because of the Israeli war. So oil prices shot up. So you had oil, you know, gas prices went from what, 40 cents a gallon to like a dollar, which had people like horrified. I mean, absolutely horrified. So plus there was a shortage. Literally, if there was a line for gas, if a place had it, you got in line, even though you had three quarters of a tank. It was the most bizarre thing you've ever seen.
Oh, I can remember waiting in line for gas for like an hour to 2 hours.
Yeah, yeah. And it was a line you got in it because these guys still had gas, right? So there was a shortage and, so then food prices started to go up. And everybody says, well, wait a minute. The reason why food prices started to go up was because there's so much gasoline demand or oil demand in gasoline. You being from Iowa, Matt, you know that you've got to dry your corn and stuff using natural gas, right? Or oil, whatever the hell you're using. Then you got to lug your grain to market. Then you got to barge it to someplace. So there's a huge energy component to food, correct? So they essentially said, okay, it's all those dirty Arabs, and really, and so we're gonna take that out, and we're gonna say we're not gonna count that. We're gonna say that's an exogenous shock. How's that for a term on Monday morning? That's an exogenous shock to the system. That is really, it's not really inflation. And then you had Milton Friedman saying, "Wait a minute, it's inflation. It just starts a different place every time. Just happens to be starting in oil and gas, or oil and food right now. Just like this time, people were saying, well." There's no inflation. Well, wait, what about medical stuff? Well, we're not counting that really. What about, stock market? What do you mean? Those are just good companies. So it always, you never can pick where it starts. It's always uneven. So that all of it goes all the way back to the early 70s to when inflation started with oil and food, but it didn't really start there. It started when we went off the gold standard in the Bretton Woods in like 67, 68. How's that for a long-winded version of that? But and then sometimes it'll go into housing, sometimes it'll go anywhere. But that's the danger of it, is you never know where it's going to be. And right now, some people are fat and happy. I mean, who's probably benefiting most from inflation right now are your Targets, your Home Depots, those people, because they have huge pricing power. I mean, PTI doesn't. I mean, we can't just say, hey, let's just raise our commissions like 50% this week. I don't know about you guys, Matty. I mean, is your stuff competitive enough where you can't just say, hey, wait a minute, there's inflation, inflation's 4%, we're gonna raise stuff 8? I don't think you guys are there. It's probably too competitive.
It's so competitive, our prices keep going down.
Yeah. So, I mean, so you're not gonna benefit by this.
Not at all.
No.
It sucks, because what we were getting 5 years ago, we're getting half.
Yeah, yeah. No, but other places, you roll right with it. Okay? I mean, Home Depot has every ability to lumber prices double, to raise them double plus 10%. because there's only a few places. That's why one of the things we'll talk about with John Flanagan a little bit, or if you read this, we have this problem in the supply chain. Now, if you listen to the show, I mean, Kevin O'Neill talks about supply chain problems all the time because we offed all this stuff to China. Some of these companies subcontracted everything out. So now that we have an amazing amount of our chips are made overseas, fortunately, in South Korea and Taiwan. But can you think of two places that are more susceptible to Chinese takeovers than South Korea and Taiwan? So our companies here have offloaded this stuff. Now, but this is not, and they're saying now there's only a couple of companies here that are making it, and they want to give all this money to the companies here to do it. But can you think of any, remember, Rod, we were reading that article, was on, I think you still had the Tribune. We were getting the Tribune on Sunday morning. I think I mentioned it to you, Maddie, where all the stuff with the Homeland Security, and how many companies, I mean, talk about difference than the World War II era, how many companies had gotten contracts with the Homeland Security bill and immediately turned around and sold them to somebody else. There were something like 90 companies in the Washington area that were loaded up with basically a lobbyist up there behind and got some contract, immediately turned around and sold it to Honeywell. Never did any of it. And how when the hurricane, Katrina, came by, how there were all the cleanup contracts went to, you know, Maddie Weber's place, who offed it to Thomas, who offed it to somebody, and they said when he went down to Katrina, he ended up with a guy in a dump truck and three illegals basically doing the work for $10 an hour. Yet the contract was four levels higher than the people actually doing the work. So that sort of has happened in the chip companies. I mean, Kevin might call in later and talk about this, but where everybody's offloading their stuff to these places in South Korea and Taiwan. Well, the problem is, if all of a sudden we start causing more trouble with China, the last thing we want is a Chinese takeover of Taiwan. I don't put that out of the realm, do you?
Well, we already have chip problems and a chip shortage.
Well, that's why.
So, you know, as far as appliances and car parts, wiggle inflation hits all that stuff.
Yeah, the amount of when you talk about chips, Maddie, you'll never believe this, but I was on the double secret Y2K. What's the floor going to do if everything blows up? Committee. Can you imagine me being on that committee? I was also on the.
I'm sure you added a lot.
Oh yeah, I was also on the hacking committee. Talk about not having any idea what these people were talking about. But I was the board member. It was one of those things where anybody who wants to volunteer, step up, and everybody else step back, and I didn't. It was one of those deals. I tell you what, I learned so much about how much is in, the Y2K thing. Obviously, everybody was worried about the, in those days, Maddie,
computers that roll it over.
Right, but there was a time when was it every five or six lines of code, there was a date in there? I mean, it was really strange how those things were all written way back in the day. But everything you own had chips in it, and they were all there was more handsets and phone lines on the trading floor than what, was it a town of 100,000 people? Or some incredible?
Yeah, well, it was like, if they took all the wires and went around the earth, I forgot how many times,
yeah.
Three times or something.
Yeah, back when it was all just phones, man, you wouldn't have believed it. How many phones were stuck in every aisle and in every booth. But every one of those things has chips in them. Every single one. But you can't trace the chip, because every phone or every handset has a chip that was designed for something else. It might have been designed for a computer, and it was a second. So instead of having, you know, X capacity, it might have half X capacity, which was three times as much as needed for a phone. But says because you couldn't sell it for what it was originally intended for, you could actually buy it cheaper than the one that was designed for the phone, even though it was like three times as good. And I don't know if the stuff is even, if it's done like that anymore, Maddie. So you would have literally hundreds of thousands of chips on the trading floor in phones, in everything, in computers. And you had no idea where they came from, because they all would come on this, you know, kind of secondary market type of thing. So people had absolutely no idea of what was going to work and what was going to work, Y2K. So what happened now is your companies, there's like two, what do they call them? Maybe they call them feeder places or someplace. They actually make all these chips as wholesalers. and most of them come out of South Korea or Taiwan. So we're actually, what are we making now? 23% of the chips actually on shore, right? So that's what we're trying to end up doing. But anyway, we only got a minute. I'm skipping all over the place here because there's so much stuff to talk about this morning. But how long do you see this exodus? I mean, is it going to stop when everybody gets their shots or what?
I think a lot of people who, especially the ones that I have spoken to that lived in a high rise that had to wait 45 minutes to an hour to get in the elevator to come down to the ground floor and had so many restrictions on them and had no balcony and were locked in a box in the sky, basically said they'd never do it again. So, you know, it takes a while for people to forget. But I think if, you know, the same way 5-10 years down the road, whatever. It depends, you know, it depends if Chicago turns into a ghost town downtown. What are they going to do with all those empty buildings? So until somebody can devise a plan to bring Chicago back together and encourage people to open businesses that won't be shut down at the whims of the government, I think you're going to have a problem.
Well, do you think there's going to be somewhat of a people are going to want their really nice place further out in the suburbs, and you're going to want a studio downtown to crash 3 nights a week or something? That your demand might go that way?
No.
I got to believe that. I know
people would rather. I think a lot of people are just over that whole idea.
Well, hey, give us a shameless plug and a phone number.
If you're looking to buy or sell, you can give me a call at 708-846-6494. Or send me an email at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com.
All right, thank you very much. S&P Futures down 5.25. NASDAQ Futures down 32. Come back with Mr. John Flanagan.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Garson jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now.
Right here, right now, right now. Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Ali, Mr. Bill Weber on the board. S&P Futures down 5.25, and NASDAQ Futures down 32, Dow Futures down 35. So, had a record week last week, so we're coming back a little bit today, so I don't think that's much of an issue, at least not yet. Asia, Nikkei down 229, it's 0.8%. Shanghai down 37, it's a full 1.1%. We've got the Hang Seng down 245.9%. Alibaba shares are up, even though they they got a huge fine. People must have thought it was going to be more, but they're up 6% on a $1 billion fine from the Chinese government. Very strange. Can't write fiction like this. DAX up 20.1%, FTSE down 21.3%, CAC around up 8.1%. So quiet over in Europe. Everybody's in the bar in Britain as the bar is open. As a way of review, Friday, Dow was up 297, that's 0.9%, S&P up 31.8%, NASDAQ up 70.5%. We've got bonds at 1.67 unchanged, the one minus 0.31, it's pretty much unchanged, and Japan positive 11, pretty much unchanged. So not much going on there. Oil up 77 cents, eking back over 60 bucks at 60.09. Brent up 87 cents, 63.82. Natural gas up 6 cents, 2.58. RBOB up a penny to 198. We've got gold down a buck 90, 17.42. Still pretty far up from where it was under 17 for a while, so it's rallied back some. Silver down 6 cents, 25.26. Copper down a penny at 402. And we've got our crypto, our favorite crypto, Bitcoin up 426, over 60,000 and 60,142. Manny, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're off to a decent start, except on the outbound Eisenhower, because it's closed due to an overnight shooting slash accident that resulted from the shooting that happened on the outbound Eisenhower, right near the circle here, downtown between Ashland and Damon. The investigation is continuing this morning. That has the outbound Eisenhower closed, so you'll want to keep that in mind. Inbound side is open, but the outbound side is closed right there at Ashland. No issues on the Edens or Kennedy. Stevenson, traffic building heavily as you're approaching the circle due to some exit ramp work, but no issues on the outbound side. Southside expressways have been quiet all morning. Same for Lakeshore Drive. Weather today, it's going to be a very pleasant day. Clouds early, and then we'll have sunshine later on, a high of 62. Right now it's overcast and 51 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny and hot today with a high of 91. Right now it's clear and 67. In sports, not a great day for our Chicago teams yesterday. The White Sox had an early lead and then lost to the Royals 4-3 in 10 innings. Cubs had a 1-0 lead and then gave up 7 straight to the Pirates, dropping 2-3 in Pittsburgh, losing 7-1. But the Diamondbacks won. They shut out the Reds 7-0. So as we take our Monday morning look at the Major League Baseball standings, as we do every week during the spring and summer, the White Sox are 4-5 on the young season, 4th place in the AL Central, but just 1.5 back of 1st place Cleveland. The Cubs are also 4-5, 4th place in the NL Central. They're 2 games back of 1st place Cincinnati. And the Diamondbacks are in 4th place in the NL West. So all 3 teams very mediocre. Diamondbacks are at 4-6, but they're 4 games back of the Dodgers because the Dodgers are really good at 8-2. NBA basketball, the Bulls with a bad loss last night, losing in Minnesota 121-117. Blackhawks were off. They're at Columbus tonight. It's a 6 p.m. puck drop as the Hawks are in the stretch run of trying to make the playoffs. Coyotes lost to the Golden Knights 1-0. And the Masters wrapped up yesterday, and it was Hideki Matsuyama winning, shooting a 10-under, becoming the first Japanese national to win a major in golf, which I didn't know that. As he held on, had a big lead heading into the final day.
There's no place where golf is more popular in Japan.
Yeah, and held off the young upstart that we were talking about earlier, Will Zalatoris, who finished one shot back at 9-under. Jordan Spieth and Xander Schauffele were tied for third place at 7-under.
Xander gets the 6 on the par 3, but he was coming right at him, too.
He was, yeah. Put a lot of pressure on him and then fell apart on that one hole and couldn't really recover.
I've gotten 6s on. It's the first triple bogey like he's ever had in a major.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Can you say you've never had a triple bogey?
No, I can't say I've never had a triple bogey. I've had a million triple bogeys. They were like a horrible start for Xander. I think, was it holes 2, 3, and 4? He went bogey, bogey, double bogey.
Yeah.
And then he got hot and made a stretch. But I texted one of my buddies, bogey, bogey, double bogey doesn't sound that bad.
No, not in Augusta, for God's sake. Jan, how are you?
I'm fine, Tom. How about you?
Pretty good. Well, you know, those guys, it is startling when you see how when the course conditions change, how good they can be. Did you? I don't know if you read the fine print, but they were, of course, Saturday. I turned the games on, and the Sox were rained out. and the Masters is on delay, and I'm thinking the Cubs had yet to get hammered. They were about to. So I'm what's the guy who won? How do you pronounce his last
Matsuyama.
Name? Matsuyama. He must have come out after the rain when the course had softened up. And what was he? 600 and it's like five holes or something?
Yeah, he had an unbelievable finish to round three.
Yeah.
And built this huge lead. He was in contention. I mean, after round one, I think he was three under, like one shot back, or no, Rose shot a seven under round day one. But he was like in third place at three under after day one. And then after day two, he was kind of, I think he shot around even, so he was maybe two or three under. And then, day three, he just shot up the leaderboard.
It was all after the rain, I think.
I think a lot of it was. I know he had an eagle, though, the first three rounds of the tournament. He had eagle on Thursday, eagle on Friday, and eagle on Saturday. And that's how you win. Six under on three holes there. And that was huge. And then Sunday, he actually played his worst round of the tournament, but had such a big lead after Saturday that he was able to hang on by one.
How many eagles have you gotten?
In my life?
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever had an eagle.
I think I've had like four.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever had an eagle. I've had a bunch of birdies, a bunch of pars, but I don't think I've ever had an eagle.
I canned an 8-iron on a par 4, so that's an eagle. I've never had a hole in one. But I've had maybe 3 on par 5s where I've got there in 2 and putted in.
The hole in one thing, I think I've told this before. My dad is like a 4 handicap. He's a really good golfer, played his whole life, never had a hole in one. My mom has played golf 12 times in her life and has a hole in one. and he was there when she, so she's not lying. He saw it. He goes, it was like a par 3. She takes out a wood when it's like a 9-iron and basically whacks a ground
ball. Wood for her.
Yeah, whacks a ground ball that's kind of like a worm burner low line drive that hits about, 20 yards short of the green, rolls up and rolls right into the hole.
Right up the ladies' aid. That's what they call it.
Like, what the hell?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
it's such a fluky play. I mean, you don't even see pros do it that often. I mean, they do it more often than anyone else, but there was a hole-in-one at 6 by, Connors on Saturday?
Yeah.
It was the 6th ever hole-in-one on that hole. 87 years in the Masters is 6th ever. It just doesn't happen very much.
I ran a golf tournament where my job was to get the insurance for the hole-in-one thing. And, that's an interesting thing. There's like a couple of insurance companies that will actually give you the insurance.
So if you're giving away a car for a hole-in-one, okay.
And it costs, when I did it, the cars were, 10 grand. I mean, so it was, I think it was like $300 or $400 or something. But you had to have somebody watching it, and the hole has to be over, it had to be over 165 yards. You couldn't have a 100-yard hole. And, so of course, some knuckleheads from the, OEX, they ran this golf tournament, and they go, screw it, nobody's going to put one in there. Of course, somebody did. They were scrambling around to find a car for the guy. But, oops, we owe you a car, but we don't have a car. See ya. that happens. And it's, usually, it'll be some kind of wacky shot that is on the ground a long time. But those guys, the hardest thing, the double eagle is the hardest in golf. I've never had one of those. I was playing with a guy who did.
So, I mean, how do you even do that? Hole a 2 on a par 5?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're playing any course worth anything, the par 5 is going to be at least 500 yards, right? Or right around it.
Oh, you can. I mean, I used to be able to get there in 2, but not anymore. But
I don't know if I've ever gotten there in 2. I've played with guys that have gotten there in 2 on a legitimate par 5. Now, if you play some of these short courses in the city, they have, 450-yard par 5s, you could definitely do that.
You find yourself doing it in like a scramble situation where you'll take the chance. There was one of this big dog leg where somebody had already put one out there for us to put one in. So I whacked one across the dog leg and I was 4 inches from home. And a beautiful shot.
That's awesome.
But I would never have done it if it was just me. Because the chances of me getting there were like 1 in 100, right? But you can do it. These guys, what are these guys on these par fives? They're there with drives and irons all the time. I mean, it's
And that's how they're making eagles is they're reaching in 2 and making a long putt.
And once in a while, I clunk one on a par 4. I mean, it'll drop. So, John, I was doing a little bit of research here, and I don't know what possessed me to do this, but I went back to did some. I actually part of it was I I found the page. It's a Fred page, Federal Reserve Funds Rate thing. And I don't know who they'll put it out, but you can actually take the you know, the graph goes all the way back, and you can modify it. So I'm looking here for when the when you see, I like the guy, but guys like Steve Leisman that essentially are, I won't say he's a lapdog for the Fed, but he's kind of a lapdog for the Fed. These guys got it all figured out, right? Well, I remember a time when they didn't have it all figured out. And here I'm looking at, on January of 1972, when the federal funds rate was 3.3. Now, you remember some of this. You nudge it forward to March September of 1973. So what is that? 14 months later?
Yep. 10.78. Yikes.
Yeah, that's a real number. And if you nudge it just a little further to, if I can get this thing right. That's what happens when you get so much stuff on the graph. July of 1974, 12.292. So they went up 9 points in 2 years. So the idea that don't worry when there's inflation, we get it all figured out, and any increases will be gradual. Bull bleep. When these guys lose control, they lose control. And then they panic. And if you look at this thing and you cut out the edges, go from it goes for 60 years. But I mean, if you take it from like 1964 through to 1990 and see what happened in that period of time, it's startling, especially when you have people telling you it can never happen again. Don't worry, we got this all figured out. Because the idea of all of a sudden people recognizing something happening and being able to fix it in a month or two, first of all, you're in denial totally, right? For how long? I mean, it's not like the first day you see it, you admit it. So you gotta be in denial for how long, right? At least a year or two.
And there's people keeping you in the dark too.
So. Yeah. Yeah, and you wonder why people are. I mean, I was reading last night, and it's a small thing, and who even really cares? But it just goes to show you. Here's an article by Emily DeCicco, Ciccio. Well, young Italian, less. Is that Hispanic or is that Italian? C-I-C-C-I-O. I'm not sure.
Probably Italian,
I would think. But she writes an article here about Dr. Ashish Jha and how something simple like the CDC. Remember back a year ago when if somebody had COVID, they had people, special chemicals, and the people on the same floor here as PTI are in the office cleaning business. Maybe, I don't know if you ever talked to them, but for 2 or 3 months, maybe 6 months, they had nothing but business. If somebody had caught the COVID, they were going in there and it was bleach and God knows what else. The special stuff, killing viruses, killing this and whatever. Now, this article says, the CDC said Monday that a thorough soap and water scrub is adequate to keep COVID-19 from spreading in a home. I don't understand actually what took CDC so long to really be clear about this. The virus has spread through the air and always has been. Jha noted the CDC's public health messaging has been part of a larger pattern of poor messaging from the government when it comes to COVID. How much money did some people make in them delaying this news? I mean, I've known you forever. I trust your opinion of me. Am I getting totally? I don't know. So I want
you as jaded as I am, Tom.
When I see this, and all of a sudden I know there's money behind it. Every day there's dough for somebody that shouldn't be getting it, or if you said something like this, all of a sudden people would just be buying regular. I'll use the term spick and span or something instead of buying all this esoteric crap, right?
You go to the dollar store, pick up 20 of them. So.
Yeah. We've had some people, contributors to the show that are kind of going back and forth with each other, politics, imagine that. And when you look at, everybody is, a lot of people couldn't stand Trump because his family had had businesses going on while he's being in office. And yet, I see all kinds of people with businesses in office. Pritzker, I mean, Pelosi, Schumer, McConnell. I mean, it doesn't matter which side of the aisle you're on.
Rice, all these people.
Yeah, I mean,
they're like, you know, their own separate governments in a way. They're quite diversified in how they make their money, and they make lots of it. And some of it is trading on their position, you know, whatever the position they happen to have. But they're also, you know, they're into a lot of decision making that can enhance their positions too.
Well, and when whoever it is, it doesn't seem like it's stunning to me how the Republicans point the fingers at the Democrats, and Democrats point the fingers at Republicans when the fingers really should be pointing in the mirror. or is that a high school? Hey, look in the mirror, buddy. I mean, it's so bizarre. And now with this COVID thing, the ability to do that. And now what I'm kind of leading into is with this stuff with these semiconductor companies. You let these people combine, and now you say to yourself, we don't have enough companies. I'm going to say, you know, we hear from Kevin Wednesday or whenever, and he's Mr. Supply Chain Management Guy. How many industries do you think we have that if you really looked at it, we don't have enough to supply people here in this country if we need it? I mean, every thought, you know, again, I'm zero fan of Mr. Trump, but I mean, at least he was smart enough to say, hey, if we're going to have a Navy, we better at least have a steel company, because don't we make ships out of steel? I mean, there's a certain amount of common sense that some people have, and other people, no, what do we need a steel company for? Well, in case we ever want to make a ship. Well, why can't we buy it from China? Well, what if we're fighting China? Well, then maybe we won't get steel from them. I mean, is there any, if you look at what's going on, I mean, how many other industries do you think the chip thing is there? It's got to be certainly there in medicine, right?
I can't think of one offhand that isn't tied to it. If not in the product, certainly in the business end of it, and in the employment end of it, and it, you know, there's stuff behind the scenes. So, sure.
Well, but here seems to be, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, here we're going to allow the Flanny Matty chief company, and God knows what we're making widgets. We're going to let us buy up all the other widgets or drugs companies to where, and then we're going to say, well, we're charging, I don't know, what did Viagra used to cost? $45 a pill, same thing. When they were doing all the commercials on TV. So, okay, so what do we do? Well, I'm not so sure they did, but there's a lot of drugs that are. Let's off our production in Viagra to China. All right, so then, because we're going to get it cheaper over there. So we're making it for $5 a pill here. We can't live on making only $35. We got to get it down to $4, right? I mean, God knows we can't live on $35 a pill profit. We got to have $36. So let's off that over to China. So now all of a sudden there's a shortage in Viagra, and all the men and women of the world that are over the age of 65. Are having a huge outrage because they don't have Viagra, and you know, God knows what they're doing at night. So they're forced to talk to each other or something. Who knows? But whatever it is. Now all of a sudden, the solution is going to be to get the company that has Viagra and give them $100 million for a new Viagra plant. Well, those are the same guys that off the Viagra plant and stuck it over in China. Can't there be anybody else? Can't we end, if Viagra is the problem, and I'm using that tongue in cheek, obviously, I mean, why can't we find a second or third or fourth person? The problem is we had only one supplier, right, that we allowed to get, or we had 10 suppliers that we allowed to work their way down to one or two, and then off the stuff overseas. To me, that's the issue, right? So now the solution is to give those same guys government money to build the same plant they couldn't wait to close and send to China 10 years ago. How is that a solution to anything, John?
It's not a solution at all. It's what you were saying in the first half hour with Audrey about the Homeland Security money, and these places got money just, you know, cashed out, got out of it completely. So there's absolutely no real benefit there in whatever aid is given out. You can see it all over the place now, too. It has nothing to do with any kind of long-term, and by long-term I just mean like 3 months out or 4 months out. you know, what will happen if XYZ occurs? And you would think these kind of contingencies would force people to make some really tough decisions about, well, worst case scenario is we can't get any of this stuff, and then what? Well, we better have some fallback and start making the stuff here or someplace that's less likely to be in some kind of stranglehold or overrun by some foreign power or whatever. There's none of that thinking at all, and there hasn't been, I'd say, for going on 40 or 50 years now.
But
it's all about just take the money today, and if we have to pay a lot more money to lure people back to make it here, well, that's tomorrow's problem. It's not today's problem.
Well, I mean, so the Intel people, and I'm just using that as a name, they're going to show up with their lobbyists. I always thought that Matt Weber would be a terrific lobbyist. What do you think? I mean, good-looking guy, very well-spoken, can go out, have a couple of cocktails, not make an idiot out of himself. You're going to be a designated drinker for the firm and partier and so forth. He'd be a perfect lobbyist. It's a gift. He could go to the health clubs.
I think he's too nice a guy, though. What do you think, Matt? Could you do his job?
I think he'd be the best.
I've heard of some really nasty lobbyists.
I tell you what, we had a guy. We had a guy at the CBOE, and I could talk about him because he's DED dead. What was his name? Tommy Boggs. He was with Patton Boggs and Blow. How's that for a name of a firm? And he was the son of Hale Boggs, so of course having talk about an entry into places. And guess who was his sister, Jen?
Oh, Cookie Roberts.
Yeah, yeah. She was the daughter of Hale Boggs. And changed. Well, I don't know if she got married and the name changed normally, but whether she did.
Yeah, she married a Catholic guy, and they did a couple books about, you know, inter-religious marriages and stuff. So
really, I mean,
was Catholic. She was Catholic, and her husband, I think, was Jewish. Roberts was Jewish. So
Hale Boggs was Catholic. Yeah. There's a stretch. Anyway, he was. John, he could go to a room if there were 40 guys there. You know, if you ever go into these things where little cocktail party, people standing around, like the MOPES and the CBOE board and the staff, and you'd have the SEC there and other people. I mean, everybody kind of stands around in their four or five person groups, right? I mean, just kind of the way people hang, you know? And he would go to every single group. Always had a drink in his hand. I never saw him take a drink, but he always had a drink in his hand, tinkling the ice. And if it was a bunch of guys, he'd tell sort of an off-color joke. And if it was women, it was a little better story. It wasn't had any kind of an issue with political correctness or anything. And he would, if there were eight of those groups, he could spin them in, I'm going to say, 45 minutes, put his drink down and out the door. I bet he could do three or four of those a night. And always had a great personality, liked the guy, you know. If you had a question, he was always there for you. And, you know, that firm probably had 50, 60 companies that were the $10,000 a month club, where that was their retainer for just watching out for crap happening in Washington that affected those places. And, it's something that every firm is going to have to do or feels they have to do. I mean, the last thing you want is if you're in the CBOE chairman, to have some bill make it out of committee that affects your business and you didn't hear about. And yet you don't have people internally to watch every single knucklehead in Washington thinking about they're going to put something in a bill that's going to affect your firm, right? So you pay these guys to do it. And they're more than willing to do it for you. And they have a big staff, and that's what they do. And, but I mean, what a great job. Anyway, it's just what. But right now, the same people are going to get the money. Let's see, Jan, we contracted to you for PT boat torpedoes. Well, yeah. Well, who makes the torpedoes? Well, I shipped them down to Mexico. Really? You don't make them here anymore? Nope. Well, we decided we want them made here. How about $1 billion we give you to make them here instead of Mexico? Okay. You couldn't write fiction like that, Jan.
Well, you know, it smacks of profiteering.
Sure it does.
If you put the government and the military into the equation, I think it's definitely that. And the taxpayer's paying twice for stuff that really should only require one payment. You know, make the stuff here, employ your own citizens here, make yourself, you know, a place that people want to come to, and not try to shove the stuff out the door and let somebody else, you know, deal with the dirty end of it. But you collect all the profits, and you lose control of it maybe at some point, but you won't ever be poor. You know, you'll have some other entree into another wing of your business, or you'd be hired by the competitor that took you over to run the thing. So there's no tag days for those people in my book. But they just as soon sell down their neighbor and their constituents as get up.
How many chips? We'll talk about this after. How many chips do you think in total the federal government buys every year with phone sets? How many are made overseas? I mean, and now they're shocked that they're made overseas. S&P futures down 6. NASDAQ futures down 35. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com. That's AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Well, and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom. He's Mr. Brent Weber on the board. Mr. Janet Flanagan with us as well. Speed futures down 7. As that futures down 36, so slightly down, but not much considering we were up all last week. So, Maddie, real quick, we have some bizarre stuff going on in sports. What is with the guy that stuck his elbow over the middle of the plate Friday night and won the game for the Mets?
Yeah, that was, for those that missed that, that was a pretty spectacular ending to a game. So to set the stage, the Mets had the bases loaded in a tie game with two outs and two strikes. And,
ninth inning, right?
In the bottom of the ninth. And the Marlins pitcher, trying to extend the game, throws a pitch on the inside corner. And the umpire calls strike three, called strike, but right before it hits the catcher's mitt, the batter leans into it, sticks his elbow over the inside corner of the plate, and
the ball is padded elbow.
Yes, and the ball clips his elbow. And after the umpire calls strike three, you're out, you know, let's go to the 10th inning, he changes his mind and says, hit by pitch, go to first, and it walks in the winning run. And he, like, panicked and freaked out, and the Marlins manager, you know, Don Mattingly, comes running out. Like, what the hell? It can't be a hit by pitch if it's a strike. A strike you know, overrides a hit by pitch, whether it's swinging or looking. You called it a strike.
You didn't try and get out of the way.
Right, and no one enforces that rule. Yeah. But that's another rule, is you're supposed to actually try to get out of the way of a pitch that's inside, even if it's off the plate. You're supposed to try to get out of the way, but no one ever does, and they never enforce it. So I guess that is another element to this. But the fact is, he called it a strike and then changed his mind and said, hit by pitch, go to first. Well, it's not reviewable, so they couldn't challenge it. But instead of just calling in the rest of the umpiring crew and saying, you know, hey, I called it a strike, I freaked out and said hit by pitch, go to first, but it was a strike, you know, he's out, let's go to the 10th inning, he just stood by his correction, and the game was over. So the Mets are celebrating on the field, and the Marlins are going, what the hell, it was a strike.
What was the last time you saw a game played under protest?
You seem to see it like once a season, maybe. I don't know.
Now, why wouldn't that? Because it's clearly a...
They may have. I don't know.
Well, they have to announce that.
Well, the game was over. I'm sure they announced, if it did happen, it was announced, you know, well after the game.
That'd be interesting to... Because clearly there was a rule issue.
I've just never seen that before. If you see it all, I see Rizzo do it three times a season, where a big slider comes in or curveball and it fools him, and he swings and misses. The ball hits him in the thigh, but he's out because it's a strike. He swung and missed. No different if it's called a strike. If you lean over the plate, or if you stand over the plate and your elbow's on the inside corner and the ball is pitched on the inside corner, the umpire calls it a strike. It doesn't matter if it hits your elbow; it's a strike.
Well, what is the deal with the other team's drilling Contreras now, like every game, and then when the guy goes in hard to second base, and they can't wait to call him out because he mean.
I thought that was terrible. Also,
yeah,
I mean that was in yesterday's Cubs game. If anyone saw that, I wouldn't blame you if you didn't watch it. But it's a 3-1 game, so it's a big play. There's runners at first and third with one out. Rizzo hits a hard ground ball to the first baseman. He goes to second. And Contreras does, you know, a hard slide at second, doesn't make contact with the shortstop, and is within arm's length of the base, which are the two rules. But does an aggressive slide. It causes the shortstop to throw a wild throw to first. So Rizzo's safe at first. He goes to second, and then the run scores from third. So now it's a 3-2 game, and the Cubs have a guy in scoring position with two outs. Well, the Pirates challenge it, and they say that Contreras, you know, didn't make a slide to the base like you're supposed to with the new rules. And they reviewed it, and they called him out, even though he made no contact with the guy, and he was within arm's length of the base. He could touch the base. So I found that to be surprising.
Well, now you have to go directly at it.
Well, I guess, but you can slide and touch the base with your hand.
Well, no, they were talking... because I was listening on the radio, and you get a better feel there. But who's the caller guy? He was
Ron Coomer.
Yeah, and I think he's really good.
Coomer's saying, good.
He goes, no, the new rule is you have to slide. He goes, it's just like Little League. You got to drive, go right to the base. You can't even go one side or the other. Like even a hook.
Well, that wasn't my interpretation of the rule.
Apparently, it got stronger this year or the year before.
It's possible, but I always thought the new rule was you can't slide late. Like, you can't do that slide where you don't even start your slide until you're at the base because you're trying to take the guy out. And you have to reasonably be able to reach the base. I mean, whether it's with your foot or your hand, you got to be able to reach the base. And I thought Contreras did both of those things. And then not only that, he made absolutely no contact with the guy. So it's not like he even touched the guy. I thought that was a bad call.
He was saying that
certainly hurt the Cubs.
He was saying it's some new interpretation, and it sounded recent, that you actually have to slide for the base, that the fielder can count on you coming right at the back.
And that might be.
Because it's like Little
League. Doesn't sound good for business in an already tough climate.
You're
really drag the fans away if you start disappointing them like this.
Well, that's true. And then another point about that, John, is that on the TV broadcast, the new Cubs broadcaster, Boog Xiambi, who, you know, I think is pretty good, and as we get used to him, I'm sure we'll grow to like him. But he talked about how whether you're at the game or you're watching the game on TV, baseball is the worst of all the sports of actually explaining what just happened. So the umpires will huddle together about something, and then there's no announcement. They don't tell the fans in the crowd, in the park. They don't tell the PA announcer.
Right.
They don't tell the broadcasters. So he goes, we have no idea why exactly they called him out there. Like, you know, they don't explain it. There was another play where the umpire threw out somebody from the Cubs dugout. Well, no one knew who he threw out.
That's right. I didn't know that on radio either. Like,
yeah. It wasn't Ross because Ross was still there. It wasn't one of the players that was playing because, you know, no one was having to be substituted out. But it was never announced. And that's another thing. You're talking about a business, a product that people are paying for, whether they're going to the game or they're watching on TV. And with the Cubs, you really are paying for that channel.
Oh, yeah.
And you can't even get a simple explanation when something happens that affects the game. I mean, it's just become a really bad product.
Well, they were ticking down the people who should have been on the bench where they still saw them there.
I mean, that's terrible.
Well, plus, they're not even there.
I know. And then the broadcasters are all in Chicago for the game in Pittsburgh.
When's that going to change?
Good question.
They still don't want the broadcasters flying with the team?
What a mess.
I guess not in baseball.
Because, is that his name, Jambi, was saying the one umpire. No, it was basketball. I was watching the Bulls last night, and the guy, was it Stacy or the other guy, talking about every time he flies now, he runs into the referee because he's flying with the referee because nobody can fly with the team.
Yeah.
I still think these people, the idea that you play right now, you know, right next to everybody, shoving, breathing all over everybody, spitting all over everybody, then when you leave the court, you got to go to your special chair and put your mask on. It's so outrageous. I mean, are we that stupid? We must be. I mean, it's, anyway.
We're stupider, Tom. We're putting up with it.
What did John Carlin say? George Carlin? Man, look at how stupid the average guy is, and half the people are stupider than him or something.
That's a great line.
Anyway, so I'm reading this thing about what do you think? Of course, now, John, everybody's got an opinion on how the world has changed forever with the COVID stuff. And I don't know. I get the feeling that once some people start coming back to work, people are going to want to be back at work with the people that they work with. I mean, some companies are. Isn't it Google now, or somebody's already saying we want people back at work, that the home experiment has not worked at all? Do they think their productivity's dropped dramatically with people being at home? And so then you have all these human resources guy on there talking about, geez, you know, if you want to hire somebody now, you got to be able to hire somebody who's going to stay at his home and never come in. I'm like, okay. I mean, I don't know. Depending on the job, I guess it might be the way it is, but. You know, the idea about flexible schedules and all this. I think a lot of that has made a lot of sense for a long time, but I don't think it's going to go so totally overboard. What do you think? I mean, are colleges, are we going to finally get back to class? I mean, I don't know. I've heard from my buddies here that their significant others are teachers that Chicago Public Schools is going to promote everybody. No matter what? I mean, what's that all about?
Yeah, you know, I mean, the whole idea that the middle school, high school age students aren't back face-to-face, it's just, to me, so counterintuitive. If, you know, here you have a fairly protected group of the population by any statistics when it comes to the disease, and these people and the teachers who teach them are about as far apart as they could be. I just don't get it. You know, the teachers' unions won't be satisfied, I don't think, here until they have absolutely no face-to-face education across the board. I think that's what they're really gunning for.
Well, John, how would
they'd be perfectly happy with that.
But as a guy who's been in the... John was a teacher for many years, in a college, though. But, you've got... And you can't ever... I don't feel like I sound like a broken record, but you can't ever divorce the money from the thought process. It appears. I mean, people are economic animals. I mean, they just are. You know, the caveman did everything with regards to how many stones he had left, probably. But how do you, when you talk about, say, the Chicago Public Schools, or, say, the Catholic schools, the parents, I'll just throw numbers out there. I know the Chicago Public Schools, high schools here in Chicago, the money they get for Maddie Weber showing up on day one, I think it was, this is 3-4 years ago when I used to talk to all these people before COVID and everything else, the number was about 16.8 that, you know, Kelly High School or Walter Payton or whatever would get per student for their budget, for a student showed up at their door. That's why they always want to make sure you had people there day one, because I think some of the numbers, they got counted on day one, didn't it, Jen, I think?
Right. Head counted.
So I'm going to guess that number. Let's pick a number. Let's say it's 18,000. Now your Catholic schools, let's pick a number. Say your tuition's 20,000. Okay, so everybody's had a rack a year. Some schools, I think, by enlisting the parents and great wailing and gnashing of teeth, probably did a pretty tremendous job of educating people despite the situation, through hybrid, through some came in, some didn't, some worked at home. Now, there are people, I think, that pulled this off, Jan, or at least pretty much. Now, those people, I think, deserve to be next year in the next class, don't you? But there's also there are also people in the public schools that I've heard numbers of 5, 6, 10,000 that I haven't even heard from since a year ago, St. Patrick's Day, when everything shut down. Now, what do you do? Well, first of all, you don't have the $18,000 to run them through again, even if they wanted to. You don't have the setup for everybody to go to summer school and make some semblance of catching up. You might not even know where the hell they are at this point. But let's put it this way. Going from people who work their fannies off, basically, and are pretty much up to date, teachers and kids, and there's people who probably don't even have a computer, don't even know where one was, don't care, or do care and didn't have one. I mean, there's a massive spectrum from people that haven't learned less than one in a year to people that are pretty caught up. And maybe some even did better. It's even possible too. So, but how do you have a policy that applies to everybody when you see this massive spread in front of you?
Well, I can't imagine what kind of policy it would be, and that's the drawback in all of this, push towards online education, which certainly makes sense from a financial standpoint, where you can save, get a gazillion dollars in utility bills and, transportation costs and everything else, but the price you pay in losing control of the product doesn't seem worth it. So, the parents who are themselves, well-educated or value education will see that their kids get the best they can, whether at home or on the computer. But there's a huge swath of the population that isn't that motivated, and the public schools used to be a way of kind of keeping those people competitive at a certain level, because in many cases the teachers and the kids around them cared more about this one kid than perhaps anybody in the kid's home when it came to whether you got up in the morning or went to school or not. And that's all lost now, and it's really been kind of devalued. That doesn't seem to be an important part of the education equation anymore, but I think it's a huge part of it. And once you say that that's not a part of it, I don't know how you ever make it a deal where everybody's going to come back as they used to and agree to sit in this building for so many hours a day and get educated. I think you've kind of thrown it back onto the families, which in many cases is no support network at all, and it's just going to create a greater disparity between the success rates of certain students, which is, in a culture that's always pushing that equality of opportunity or equity of opportunity. And you now make it so that all of these things become institutionalized and they're all unequal, and you're still getting the same tax dollars, to pay for an unequal system. There's something desperately wrong, and I think it's going to bring this country down, both politically, militarily, and everything else before we're through.
Well, yeah, the amount of, but you can't just say everybody's got to do a do-over. There's no way you can pay for a year of education again.
No, I mean, had there been a bigger drive, we're going to have on-site education, and damn the torpedoes. Let's see how it goes. And if people start getting sick in huge numbers, and we get spiking, numbers with contact tracing and everything else, we'll rethink it. But we won't eliminate it. We're going to have to keep that as the default. I think that should have been the setting from the get-go. If they really cared about, coming out of this at some point. Once you keep retreating from the norm and getting farther away from it, you never get back to the norm, and the norm kind of becomes devalued and discredited too. So there doesn't seem to be now much emphasis placed on the value of having face-to-face education as the rule. So when we reach that point, then you can bet there's going to be worse and worse substitutes for that as we go on in time.
Well, one of the ladies in the office.
But the park costs district will continue to escalate, so it isn't like we're getting any farther along in the game here.
Why? I think you know, people don't change all that much. I was listening, I was driving around this weekend, so I was hearing a lot of this debate going on the radios, and they're talking about how people want to stay at home, you want to be in a comfortable environment, you want, you know, your family around you, you know, whatever. And yet, I some of the things, you know, Pullman had their issues for sure. Obviously, they're out of business. But in 100 and some years they were in business, they did an awful lot of studies on whatever you want to call it, manufacturing, engineering, people, those kinds of things. And they had a lot of history of how different managers, you know, ran the place. And they claimed that one of the older guys claimed that the best guy, the best manager ever, was a guy who absolutely had this home thing going. And that you were supposed to work 8 hours a day, and you're supposed to take Saturday, Sunday off. You're supposed to, whatever, play softball, have the bass boat, and your downtime was just as important as your work time. And if you came in on a Saturday, he'd come in once in a while, and he'd see if somebody's car is there, and he'd walk in, and he'd say, "Hey, I'm here to see you here on a Saturday." It can mean only one of two things. You don't know what you're doing, or you don't know if help. Which is it? Because his point was, there's a balance in life, and if you screw up the balance over a long period of time, that somehow you... And they had stats, John, that would... Again, this is blue-collar work. This isn't... Of course, there weren't no emails. There was no things that just detract you from what you're doing. We're talking about guys who, you know, welded for 2 hours, had a half-hour break, welded for an hour and a half, had lunch. I mean, it was... Or did something else, punch press. I mean, this is, you know... I won't say work, but that's what you did. It was, and they had statistics that would say, if you started people working on Saturdays because maybe some parts didn't show up, you could get a full Saturday out of people, maybe 1 or 2 weeks in a row. But if you just decided we're going to work Saturdays, they could tell you, after 9 weeks, you're now going to get same amount in 6 days you used to get in five. You know, that kind of thing. Well, my mom was some of the same, you know, my mom was an unusual sort. I mean, not that everybody's mom, you know, obviously is very bright. She was somewhat unusual, and she was still taking classes at St. Xavier's when she was like 75. But she was convinced, she grew up in the Depression. She said, when you have schools, I mean, she couldn't understand how in the bad neighborhoods here, you know, she goes, when you have kids that are getting no help at home, she goes, my parents were no help. You know, what I was learning, they didn't care. I mean, they wanted the kids to go to school because they came to America for that. But that wasn't, they never thought at all that that was their job. And she says, you know, the teacher's got you for 6 hours a day. That's plenty when you're age 9 or 10. We'd read something, you know, however many pages it was. We'd write out a report of what we read, or we'd talk about it. Then we'd do the math in class. The thought of sending somebody home with homework, what's the point? Everybody's helping their parents at their store or helping something. Those kids are not going to do any homework. Who's kidding who? And, you know, and now we're kidding ourselves. We really think we're going to send, you know, five kids home in any neighborhood, let alone a bad neighborhood, and they're all going to be on the computer at home when they don't even have a computer? I mean, who are we kidding, Jen? Are we kidding ourselves or what? Yet 7, 8 hours or 6 hours a day is plenty to teach people and even work now. I mean, there's things you're supposed to do at home and things you're supposed to do at work. Now, that isn't to say that 1 or 2 days a week you can't do calls at home, or if you work from yourself, like, it has her house at home or her office at home, because that's what she does. But that, I mean, there's, for most people, you want to separate one from the other, right?
Right. Well, what I've seen happen just in my family and stories that I hear about, you know, school age kids in my family, nobody is doing a 5 day school week at all, online, whatever, hybrid, whatever. And most of them aren't doing 4 day weeks, it sounds like. And the days that they have education, they may start at, you know, 10 or 11, you know, go till 2 or 3. But that's the norm now. So that to me is like, even what's being offered doesn't equate in any way to the hours that were spent in a classroom. Now, I don't know how that really measures, you know, out how much is being lost, but it can't be any better than it was, and it's probably significantly worse. And yet that again now is the norm. You know, it's a it's about going to 4-day weeks. It's going to be, you know, less and less instructional time as the norm. So it's hardly something we can afford when we're already playing catch up here.
Yet somehow,
it seems like we're never going to get back to anything like what school used to mean for teachers and parents and kids. And I just don't know. I don't think we're prepared for what the kind of change that's going to make. I don't think we're going to like, you know, the result of that kind of thinking. But I don't see any way of stopping it. Nobody seems very upset by it now, which just floors
me. Well, but we're upset enough to say, wait a minute, we need, you know, 500,000 people in five different factories now, or 10, all of a sudden in the next 2 years to start making a bazillion chips in this country. And, oh, by the way, the same thing is going to happen for drugs, the same thing. You can name, and Kevin could probably rattle off 15 industries that are something we need to have, yet the supply chain is in a place maybe we don't want it. Well, where the hell are we going to get all these people if nobody's going to school?
Right. The education level of the workforce that we're looking at here, we're ripe for, you know, having offshoring of everything before we're through, because nobody here is going to be able to compete in a global market to get a job and hold it, or to keep it here. You know, they'll be more valuable maybe someplace else, but there won't be any reason to keep any smart people here. And it's kind of, the thinking seems to be that that's okay. I don't know, I can't look around me, and I don't see anybody up in arms about any of this, so I guess this is what people have come
to. Well, you also have the mentality that a regular worker, is worth all the rice you can eat, because that's what you can pay somebody in China. So a CFO is worth $40 million, but a worker is worth $10 an hour. I mean, it's clearly a totally different mindset than back in, and we've done our best to totally, have people drink the Kool-Aid. I mean, if you go into even a blue collar bar, if there is such a thing, and say, but how come the price of cars are so much? They're going to tell you, oh man, it's because of how much the car makers work, or make per hour. What are you talking about? There's 30 hours of labor in a car. It's not those guys. It's $1,000. The car's 35. Oh man, I didn't know that. You know, I mean, our total lack of information on stuff. I mean, they don't want everybody, they don't want these people to be educated and work for $10 an hour, right?
Oh God, no.
Yeah. We don't want to pay anybody. We have to cut a little bit on our own, but it's, you know, you wonder what exactly are we doing here, and I don't see government is a fits and starts. Okay, we're a problem with the education. Well, let's throw some money at that. We got some problem with chips. Well, let's throw some money at that. The same people, but it's the same issue, John. Right? The whole idea of a competitive economy is that people recognize faster than government. I mean, what's wrong here when people talk about, you know, people who rant about we don't want to be socialists, so we don't want to be, we want to be capitalists, we want to be something. Well, look at the chip industry right now. How is it in a competitive world that would ever be allowed to happen? The fact is, it's not competitive. We let people combine and buy other chip companies and then say, we, the few of us that are left, can make more money by shipping them overseas, because we're sure not competing with each other. I mean, that's not going to happen if all of a sudden there's a neighborhood that is bereft a bar, right? Somebody's going to say, hey, I can put a bar right here and everybody won't have to get in their car to go. They can walk down the block and have a beer here, right? Or if there's a price to be made where you can make some money with corn, somebody's going to grow some corn. But there's not many industries. How do you and I get in the chip business? I mean, if we're successful at it, we're going to sell out to one of these guys, right? We're not going to stay in it.
Right. And, you know, for years, the government policy really has been nothing more than what all these companies are used to anyway. The government will throw money at a company to incentivize moving here, building a plant there, whatever. But that's just, you know, the companies expect that. This to them is just like you're getting a signing bonus or something. We now have more money than we had before, but we're not making any long-term commitment here. Let's get that straight. And the government has no policy to hold these people here. And I'm not saying they have to imprison them or anything else, but there should be better strings attached to some of this money if you really are interested in having businesses here. And I kind of question now whether anybody in the government seems to care whether there are businesses here or not. I think they will get along fine if the businesses aren't, if none of them are here practically. It doesn't seem to bother them, but certainly it's something that you and I and any working person who's going to, you know, yet to be born is going to be thinking about. And nobody is really imagining that this is something that, you know, is part of government policy too. And it isn't just, you know, bribing companies or incentivizing a quick decision here, but it's about a long-term, you know, desire and a need to have these things within arm's length reach and not having to worry about having stuff all across the world. That doesn't benefit the ultimate consumers. It doesn't benefit us from a geopolitical standpoint or a military standpoint either. So why isn't some of this being coordinated in a more, you know, concerted way to make these companies stick around? I don't know. I guess they don't care.
But we don't want to be, we don't want to be socialist. We also don't want to be competitive. So where does that leave us? Where does it lose you?
Nowhere.
Nowhere. John, thank you very much, buddy. SP Futures down 575. NASDAQ Futures down 37. Come back, Mr. Mike Hartney. He's going to straighten out all our thoughts about volatility and where all these options are trading. Volatility is going down. Well, it's up a little today, but it always comes up after the weekend. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. He's with Mr. Weber on the board of Mr. Mike Hart in a second. SP Futures down 575. NASDAQ Futures down 36. Dow Futures down 51. I like that, Manny. FOGO, fear of going out, is the new word.
That's a good one.
I mean, even if you have your vaccines every now, you're still, you haven't gone out in so long, you just have a fear of going out. What's the fear of staying in and watching the Cubs give up 100 runs a day?
Yeah, it used to be FOMO, which was fear of missing out.
Yeah.
So you would for whatever reason, you couldn't do something or you didn't want to do something, you were tired, and then your friends would be out having a great time and you had FOMO.
Well, plus you knew they were talking about you.
Now
you
wonder
what they're saying.
Now apparently you'd rather, you know, just stay home.
I don't know if I'll ever get to that, but who knows? You never know.
Me neither.
Asia, Nikkei down 229.8%, Shanghai down 37, that's a full 1%, actually 1.1%. Hang Seng down 245, that's 0.9%. Europe, not so. Europe is very slow. DAX up 10, call that flat. FTSE down 20.3%. Can't run up 5, call that flat. So we're slow there. Everybody's in the bar. As Britain opened up the pubs, and even the Prime Minister said, I'll be there at noon or midnight, whatever the hell they open. Friday, we had a big up day. Dow Jones was up 297.9%. S&P up 31, it's 0.8%. NASDAQ up 71.5%. Bonds pretty much, they are unchanged, 1.67. The Bund unchanged, minus 0.30. And Japan unchanged at positive 0.11. Oil up 84 cents, over 60 again. 60.16, that's a full percent and, well, 1.4%. Run up 88 cents, 63.83. Natural gas up 5 cents, 2.57. I don't see any cold weather coming anywhere, but they're up 5 cents. RBOB up a penny at 198. We've got gold down 350, 1741. Silver down 13 cents, 25.19. Copper down 2 cents, $4.01. And we've got Bitcoin back over 60,000 at up 605. Maybe we got forced traffic, weather, sports. But the Cubs can't hit, and the Sox can't catch.
Yeah, Cubs can't pitch either. So it's been a tough combination when you can't hit or pitch. 36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. There's no accidents to report right now, but we did have an earlier crash on the Kennedy, and we also had that closure on the Eisenhower due to the overnight shooting that happened at Ashland. Those have all been cleared now, but there's all kinds of congestion coming in both directions on the Kennedy. No issues on the Edens, but the Eisenhower is building heavily in both directions as well. Same for the Stevenson, as they have that ramp construction that's been going on for the last several months.
And several decades.
Yeah, it seems like. It's really flared up this morning, so heavy delays on the Stevenson, too. Dan Ryan, I-57 and the Bishop Ford are running smoothly at this hour. Lakeshore Drive looks good as well. No accidents to report, but give yourself plenty of time because we do have a lot of red on the screen. Weather today, clouds early and then some sunshine later on. It's going to turn into a nice day. Partly cloudy skies with a high of 62. Right now it's overcast and 52 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 91 today. Right now it's clear and 68. In sports, the White Sox had an early lead and then gave it up before losing to the Royals 4-3 in 10 innings. Cubs lost to the Pirates 7-1 and dropped 2-3 in Pittsburgh. Diamondbacks shut out the Reds 7-0. NBA basketball, Bulls lost up in Minnesota last night 121-117. Blackhawks were off. They're back in action tonight in Columbus. That's a 6 p.m. Chicago time puck drop. Coyotes lost to the Golden Knights 1-0. And lastly, Hideki Matsuyama wins the Masters Championship, shooting a 10-under for the tournament and becoming the first Japanese national to win a golf major. He finished one shot ahead of Will Zalatoris, the rookie out of Wake Forest. 24-year-old was -9 in his first ever Masters. Jordan Spieth and Xander Schauffele, who were contenders for most of the week, finished tied for third at 7-under. Chief.
Mike, how are you?
Hey, doing fantastic, Chief. How's it going this morning?
It's doing all right. I actually found a, I don't know if I shipped this to you. I found a chart, I won't say graph, of the federal funds rates after listening to Powell tell us again and again about once we start getting inflation, don't worry about it, he's got it all figured out. And there, here it was. I was on the trading floor, June of 1981, when the federal funds rate topped out. Where did it top out at? The funds rate, this is.
You know, I saw the chart, but I can't remember the detail.
June 1981, 19.10, the federal funds rate. Don't worry, wow. we got this under control. Don't worry, keep your hands in the boat. Don't rock the boat. That's a number. You know, good thing we didn't have $30 trillion in debt at that time. That's a
right. I mean, it opens the door for you look historically, and that's a lot of the information that we gather about current market conditions is trying to look historically and saying, okay, when was the last time we were close to this? or had something that resembled this. And, you know, we're really digging to find times that represent the times that we're in right now. But, you know, making a connection to 1981 is an interesting time to make that connection because there were some similarities.
Well, I mean, it's like, it's sort of like, if, well, either it happened to you or it happened to somebody else. Somehow you screwed up and put on 50 pounds, right? And you, and you got rid of it. And somehow, whoever you are, I'm going to say that getting rid of that 50 pounds is one of the hardest things you ever did, to the point where you sit there and go, I'm never going to let it happen again, you know, because it was just 6 months of misery getting rid of it. Yet when it's not your 50 pounds, I mean, clearly Powell and a lot of the current commentators, maybe because they weren't here, it appears to me they have zero sense of how tough it was to get down from 19 to 5. And how many places went out of business and how many people in savings and loans no longer had a job and how we're still trying to figure out what the right mortgage, you know, industry is. How many years later? 40? 42?
Right.
I mean, and the idea, by the way, our national debt, when we were pushing this number in 1980, was under a trillion. It was $876 billion. So that was one hell of a difference. If we ever screwed up like that this time, what are we talking about? We're talking about, what's 20% of $30 trillion? That's like a lot of money.
It's a huge amount of money. And, you know, when you put monetary terms in perspective and multiples of levels that we were at compared to where we are now, it's mind-blowing because we don't have a comparison to the past of being this leveraged, possibly you could call it leveraged, but capitalized. We've never been so capitalized, monetized, and the question, of course, always is, are we over-monetized, meaning our asset price is too high, and is volatility not reflecting the amount of risk that's out there? Let's remember, volatility is at more than a year low right now. I mean, we're trading well below what we saw all last year, which was a print over 20. We're now a couple days past few trading sessions. We even closed below 16. Or close in the 16 handle, below 17. And these are really, low levels compared to what we have been seeing. And volatility is just really low in the market. What does that mean? It just means, complacency, which means people are very comfortable. They're not insuring their positions as much. And maybe people are a little more optimistic now about the future than they were just a few months ago when volatility was trading well over 20.
What, when you say that, Mike, this has been really a question since the day I walked my behind on the floor, or started actually trading before that. When you talk about implied volatility levels, which now has morphed its way into the VIX, right? But really the same thing. Especially when you talk about the OEX or, well, now the SPX. We talk about implied volatility levels. It's always the there's several things that that thing, well, at least two things that number is trying to tell you, or what the, let's put it this way, what the market trades so that that number spits out, the market is trying to tell you through that number. Is that a better way to put it?
Right.
So now when you look at that and you say, all right, well, now it's, say, 16.5 versus 20.5. Well, clearly in the last...
So what I look at, when I see that number, I know implied volatility. High implied volatility means higher option prices, and it also means a higher potential option volatility, which translates into what we call an expected move, or a move that would happen one standard deviation of the time, which is 68% of the time. that move becomes much larger, given a higher level of volatility.
All right. Well, the question I'm getting to, and if you have the answer, thank God, because I haven't been able to find it in 40 years. Let's take a look at who's the outfit getting bought today? Nuance? Is the name of the place? Allegedly by Microsoft. Now, they're going to pop, a 23% premium. Now, whatever the volatility of this company, I don't even know their acronym, so I'm going to look it up. Suppose they're trading at a 35. Now, most of the time, in this man's opinion, the 35 is a recognition of the thing moving up and down every day and how far all over the block it is on a daily, weekly, monthly basis. I mean, the stock's wherever it is. Let's say it's 90. I don't know what the hell it even is. You know, is it going to be 92 tonight? Is it going to be 90, 90 and 20 cents tonight, normally? Is it going to be 94 by noon and then be 86 by 2 o'clock and close on? I mean, those are the kinds of implied volatility that the market is pricing, somewhat. But then, unless you get rid of the Robin Hood kind of stuff, it's really hard for the stock to, they have, some stocks have this quote takeover premium or something, but not all. And some of the most brutal takeovers were low implied volatility stock where somebody just decided to pay up 50 cents for the stock. Or they went out of business one day and you didn't think they had a problem. Now, I don't know that this volatility, implied volatility and Nuance had anything to do with Microsoft buying them up 23%. I mean, it's like a totally...
Right.
It's a total separate game. I mean, right? Or it can be.
Well, yeah. Volatility is all about unknown and known. So when things are unknown, there is high implied volatility. There's fear. There's the chance it won't happen. There's the chance it will fall through. There's a chance that the money amount won't be what they say it was. And then there's the known part of volatility. This is when volatility all comes together, tends to contract, tends to get really small, is when details start coming out. So the more details you get about a situation, the lower the implied volatility is going to get. And oftentimes with these takeovers, the rumor of the takeover, and I think everyone's heard the old adage, buy the rumor, sell the news. The idea is the rumor has a lot more volatility around it because it's an unknown, and the market is always going to add a premium to the unknown. But once details about the mergers start coming out, solid details that aren't just speculative, then, yeah, absolutely, Chief, you're going to see volatility come down quite a bit and even become stagnant and not move.
Well, I think we have a question, Matty. Do we?
Yeah, more of a comment from one of our guys on Twitter. Jim writes in, when you guys were talking about inflation a bit earlier, what people miss as we talk more and more about inflation is the impact on fixed income people. Inflation has always been really rough, but Lori Lightfoot put in a brutal provision to stop voting on property tax increases and tied taxes to the rate of inflation. Not exactly what you guys were talking about just a second ago, but I know inflation has been
right.
A theme.
Well, the...
go ahead, Chief.
I was going to say that we've been kind of mentioning lately that, coming from somebody who did the inflation stuff at Pullman, if you start lying on your numbers, Lori Lightfoot is not about, and, this is not a shot. This is... Let's put it this way. She should be listening to the show before she does that. If she were to put taxes the last 10 years or 12 years based on published CPI, she'd be, talk about shooting herself in the foot. They're showing no increases at all, pretty much, and yet there's increases all over the place. I mean, what do you suppose the cost of the city is for buying health insurance for everybody in the city and the Chicago Public Schools and everything? It's got to be up on average, what, Mike, 5% a year, 4%? And what's she going to get out of the CPI?
Yeah, it seems like that's one of the highest expenses right there alone.
And what's she going to get out of the CPI? 1? I mean, boy, Lori, you better think back on that one. What if you were ever in the rail car business and we're talking about steel and lumber? Well, not that much lumber goes in a car, but and all of a sudden lumber doubles and we're getting a 1% CPI. How's that helping us, Mike?
Right. I mean, it changes the entire dynamics. And at the end of the day, you know, you can only – markets are very efficient at coming back to a normalized market. But sometimes it can take years. And markets can remain somewhat inefficient for a relatively long time, but inefficiencies historically get weeded out. And, you know, this might be one of those problems that eventually, if the sounding becomes loud enough around it, some real changes are going to have to be made and probably made a lot faster on a much faster timeline than anyone would have wanted to do for this type of what's typically a slow trade. But misrepresenting the number year after year is not an effective way to cause a fair market.
No, and I mean, if the numbers we started out with, you know, those Fed fund numbers of years and years ago, we just got a, what, we get a 1% PPI number the other day? It was 1%, right?
Sounds about right.
Well, if we get three or four of those in a row, you know, with that and a CPI, I don't think that's priced in the market, do you?
It certainly doesn't seem that way now.
I mean, if all of a sudden, you know, we're talking about the TLT, which is, I got the 10-year, TLT is the, it's not exactly an ETF for bonds, but it's, it used to be the, Mike, you know this better than me, it used to be the Lehman Brothers 20-year plus bond fund, right?
That's still what it basically is, but 20-year plus.
Except Lehman. Except Lehman. Well, Lehman's toast, so it's not Lehman anymore. It might be Mike's 20-year bond fund, but it's not Lehman.
Right.
But, I mean, so that corresponds at 137.74 to a 10-year rate, which is the TNX, if you don't know that, of 1.67. All right, so I'm going to say that if the TNX goes to 3, that the TLT is going to be what, 95? I mean, it's got to be under 100, I would think. I mean, I'm not sure.
Right. I mean, but yeah, it's going to be significantly higher.
Lower, the TLT. The interest rates will be higher.
Well, lower in price.
Yeah. And but I mean, that's a shot. You know, I mean, that'll leave a mark. I mean, if a bond fund goes from 137 to 100, I mean, that's not what you're expecting to have happen. So, I mean, question is, are these kinds of shocks, are they priced in at all in what you and I are talking about, normal volatility? I mean, I think we're seeing now is the market on any given day now, the last 5 days, once we open them, or even the big up days, the one day we were up, what, 55 spoo points? We were up 55 at 9:30. We were up 55 at 10 after 3. I mean, it was you could have gone play golf during the day. There was no volatility other than the opening.
And we're seeing that actually, that seems to be a repetitive pattern lately in the market, is really, really tight intraday ranges. We'll see morning movements followed by radio silence where we get 6-7 points a day. I mean, I think that's one reason that's contributing to the downtick, overall market downtick in volatility. Interestingly enough, I'm just looking at KLT, and volatility is still hanging in there. The pure volatility is around 20% in the nearest expiration. But if you go out to a reasonable date that you might trade, called May cycle, you're looking at about 16%. From an IV rank perspective, this is going to tell us where that falls over the past year. We're at about the 25th percentile of volatility, which in this market, 25th percentile is pretty high.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's a well. We're not seeing the AMCs of the world. We're not seeing the was it GameStop? I mean, those days, and they were only what, a few weeks ago. I mean, no matter what the stock was trading, you essentially put the option in where you wanted to buy or sell it at your price, and somewhere during the day you got filled, right? Well, that's not. that's not happening now. I mean, now the stuff is, you know, we've. But this is the first, I'm going to say, traditional calendar move. When I say calendar move, time of the year behavior that was typical has happened in such a long time, right? I mean, it used to be that spinning out of Easter into graduation, you know, which, of course, I don't know if kids are even in school, whether they're going to be graduation, and those kinds of things, that all of a sudden, between Easter and really Memorial Day and the 4th of July, you didn't want to buy anything. I mean, it was, you know, literally, as they used
to say. That's true, yeah.
I mean, today's bid was tomorrow's offer, right, pretty much.
It just seemed like throughout the year you could kind of bank on certain slow times. The summer for me was always slow for the products I traded. It seemed like most traders like taking the summer off. That was just my speculation, of course. But there were definite dark downtimes. And it's unique for different assets the more you follow them.
Well, yeah, I mean, you might have a grain market in the summer or something like that, but I had at one point, Mike. I had 11 traders working for me, and if I could make enough to cover these idiots, when I say idiots, beloved idiots, in April, May, and June. I mean, because they were all long premium traders. Nobody wanted to be short premium and come in broke the next morning. So a lot of times during the year they did real well. So they were all long premium traders. I tell you what, the drain in April, May, and June was dramatic. You know, I had to make sure that I was short premium somewhere else just to cover all these goofballs. And I'd say literally, you know, take the buy side of the put card and the buy side of the call card, put them together and staple it. So you could only look at the every day for 90 days. It would be, where are you? You know, 80 puts, 2 to 1/8, sell you 20. It was your first trade of the day every single day. I mean,
it certainly feels like we're in that time period right now. It's been just extremely slow. But you're right, there is a little bit of normalcy to being slow around now.
Well, the only thing that would shake us out of that pretty dramatically is if you see this TLT, which actually has stopped here from going down now for the last few weeks, if all of a sudden that thing starts rocketing down again. Because there's no way that this market is priced for a 2.5 year 10% 10-year yield.
I believe that would have a big impact. That would be a major catalyst for movement, and that would add a lot of volatility into the system.
Well, nobody's a fundamental trader anymore, but these 80 times revenue things are looking really bad when your interest rate starts moving up. You know,
one's talking about it until it's a problem.
Well, or after, and then everybody's supposed to know about it, right? Well, we've known this all along. Oh, really? are you seeing any parts of the? I mean, right now, would you be trying to look at sector stuff? Where you want to buy one sector, sell another? I mean, I've got an awful lot of money. I'm trying to put to work, and I'm having trouble picking the put prices are down, so protection is down. That part's good. I'm having trouble deciding which one I want to be in. I did some stuff in the XLV for a while, and I did the XLB, but boy, trying to sell a call in the XLB for 25 cents, it's like pulling a tooth. I mean, there's no...
Right, yeah, I mean, I've been having some success doing kind of what you've been doing, which is I've been leaning towards ETFs and single stocks, and the ETFs, they still, a few of them are giving you some implied volatility to play with, not all of them, so you got to be selective. But the individual stocks that are in play, and there's only a handful every day.
Right, there are only a handful.
5 to 10 different underlyings. They're single stocks. They're not ETFs. There's higher risk associated with them. I trade them super small, but like a lot of us, we want to have our capital in play. And just sitting on the sidelines waiting for the next super spike in volatility isn't part of my game strategy anyways.
No, if you have clients, they want you to be invested, even though you're sitting there going, I don't know how invested I want to be right here. But so you look at the ones you can, but finding liquidity right now is a struggle.
Absolutely.
Mike, thank you. Is it you tomorrow or Jeff?
It's going to be Jeff tomorrow.
All right, bud, we'll talk at you next week. You have a good one. S&P futures down 550. The NASDAQ futures down 33. Not very much, considering how much we were up last week. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
Hey, guys.
What's up, G?
Want to go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early.
I got to get out of here. I think I'm going to lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.